In doing my research, I turned to my father and I asked him, "Daddy, why didn't you tell Mommy that your arm hurt?" And he answered in a way that at first didn't make any sense to me. He said, "Well, I guess I always learned that a man's role is to be protective of a woman." "Well, what does that have to do with it?" I asked. "What does being protective have to do with not telling her?" He said, "Well, if I tell her my arm hurts, she's going to worry. And maybe it's nothing and will go away in a few days, so why should I worry her for nothing?" So to him, it did have to do with protectiveness. It had to do with something else, too. He said, "If he tells my mother that his arm hurts, pretty soon he'll be coming up the elevator in their building, and a woman that, as far as he knows, he's never seen before in his life will say to him, 'Hello, Eli, how's your arm?'" Because part of my mother's sense of closeness to her friends is that she will report to them what's new, and what's new is aches and pains. And so when her friend says, "How's Eli?" she will say, "Oh, Eli's arm has been hurting him." And her friend will think, when she runs into my father in the elevator, that it would be a nice thing to show concern by asking him how his arm is. So you're showing you're a good person, showing you're caring, showing connection by expressing an interest in something you know is wrong with him. To my father, talking about a pain in his arm is not a sign of connection. It's a sign of weakness. And he would say, and has said to me, "Of course, a man is supposed to not only be protective, but is supposed to be strong and shouldn't have aches and pains." By the way, this will even carry over into visits to the doctor, where he won't want to tell the doctor what's hurting him because he won't want to show weakness. So all of these assumptions about how you're a good person and how you create connection can be very different for the women and men. And the end result is, for my mother, a very sincere frustration that my father doesn't tell her what's going on. And for my father, a very real set of frustrations that my mother is making a complaint without any real basis. Here's another example of complementary schismogenesis that comes from my own parents. How the very differences in style drive you to more extreme versions of the opposing behavior. My parents also fall into that classic pattern of, she has a problem, she wants to talk about it, and he offers advice. And he has said to me that one of the reasons he likes to offer advice is because that will stop her talking about it. And he doesn't enjoy listening to her go on and on about what's wrong, especially if there's nothing he can do about it. It makes him feel helpless. He's always learned that he should use action to solve problems. But for her, that aggravates her frustration, because talking about it is exactly what her goal is in telling him what's bothering her. So the very act of talking about it is evidence we're close, our relationship is good. It in itself reinforces that intimacy. Another aspect of complementary schismogenesis that's really important is that we tend to think of our own style, our own way of speaking, as a reaction to the other person. And we tend to think of the other person's style and what they've said as absolute. So if you hurt my feelings and I snap at you, I think I snapped at you because of something you did. But you may not realize that what you said hurt my feelings, so you think that I snapped at you because I'm a rude person. So each of us thinks of ourselves as responding to the other person, and the other person as the prime mover. We can see this in many of the examples that lead to complementary schismogenesis. In other words, much of what we're doing is a reaction to the other person, but the other person doesn't realize that we are reacting to them, and we don't realize that we are reacting to them. That our way of speaking is provoking the behavior that we don't like in the other person. Let me give you another example that captures that. A woman had a benign tumor removed from her breast, and the surgery went well, and the outcome was good, but she was really upset that following the surgery, and it actually turned out that this didn't last, but she didn't know that it wouldn't last. Following the surgery, the contour of her breast was slightly changed. And this was upsetting to her. She mentioned it to one of her friends, and her friend said, yeah, I know, you feel like your body has just been invaded. And she mentioned it to her sister, and her sister said, yeah, I know, when I had surgery, you know, I had the same reaction. And she mentioned it to her husband, and she mentioned it to her husband, and her husband said, well, you can have plastic surgery to fix that. And she really was hurt by this. And here she was telling her husband how upset she was by having surgery. And he was telling her to have more surgery. And she said, well, I'm really sorry if it bothers you, but I just don't feel like I can deal with any more surgery. And he said, it doesn't bother me. It's fine with me. And she said, well, then why are you telling me to have more surgery? And he said, but you said that it bothered you. I'm only trying to help you solve the problem because it bothers you. And neither could really accept the other person's point of view. She saw his suggesting that she have plastic surgery as a prime move. He didn't like it. He saw himself as just reacting to her.